This is an interview with Lynn Newbery at his home in Talent, Oregon. This is an interview with Lynn Newbery at his home in Talent, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is May 7th, 1993, and this is tape 5, side 2. We were talking about a little bit about property taxes and some of the issues surrounding that. And I noticed in doing some research on property taxes that the income tax in 1929 was instituted in Oregon as a means of property tax relief, that the issue actually goes back as far as that or further. It's a perennial issue in Oregon, isn't it?
Well, yes, and that's something that's interesting. Maybe we ought to talk about it just for a second. It's always interested me because you're right. The income tax law of 1929 was the Property Tax Relief Act of that year. Mm-hmm. And prior to that time, all revenue generated by government in Oregon was from property tax, ad valorem type tax. And the 6% limitation in the Constitution, of course, was an effective way to control spending because you could not expend more in one year than you expended in the past year, plus 6%. So the 6% limitation was in effect a limitation on the ability of government to spend. Then along comes the income tax, and they eliminated, as a result of the enactment of the income tax, they no longer levied a property tax for the state government. But they did levy property taxes for local government and schools. Then somewhere in the early 40s, the school people convinced the legislature that they ought to support schools from the state level. And they then undertook what was known as the Basic School Support Fund. And that was to offset local property taxes, but in fact it just became an addition to what was levied locally and enhanced, of course, the ability of schools to get revenue. One of the things that we discovered in the interim period, that famous fiscal committee that John Mosser chaired, was a study done, I think it was in Wisconsin, which indicated that when more than one level of government levied a tax or provided revenue for a given activity, why the more expensive that given activity became, because mm-hmm. the responsibility was divided for raising revenue. And so it became less effective. And this study indicated the more levels of government involved mm-hmm. in providing revenue, the worse it became. And of course, not too much attention has been paid to that finding of 30 years ago. But I think it's true. And as we've observed how the school support fund works, even under ballot measure 5, As the state provides money, why the local people said, well, your taxes are going to go down locally, so let's pass a new tax base that will still be below the rate before. But the fact still remains that they're raising more revenue. Mm-hmm. And to conclude this conversation, I think the real evil has been as the state legislature has tried to mitigate the effects of the ad valorem tax, why it's become worse. That is, spending at the local levels have become worse. And the real evil that I see, and I've looked at it as recently as when I served on the Governor Roberts Committee on Education, higher education has taken it in the shorts. They're really suffering more and while primary and secondary said, oh my gosh, we're really taking it, the facts of the case are they've received more, an increasing percentage of the state revenues, higher education has received a lower percentage of state revenue. And I think this is too bad, because the higher education system's only resource is from state government, with the exception of community colleges, but even there it's... So what we've done is shortchange students in higher education to provide for students in primary and secondary.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see things going from here?
Well, I don't know. I think I have always felt that somewhere along the line the people had to decide how much they thought government ought to take out of their resources. The way we're going now, it's a continually escalating share of the total available money is going to government. In other words, the percentage of the personal income being used for governmental activities continues to increase. Somewhere that ought to stop. And I suggested at one point, as a result of an AOI study that we did, that we ought to constitutionally limit the ability to spend. And I, coming back to the 6% limitation, that was what our founding fathers did. Mm-hmm. But when we ventured into different and additional taxes, why, instead of limiting the ability to spend from those resources, we did not. So we have a weird system in Oregon. Of course, we do in every state. But somewhere along the line, I think the people have to decide, and I think they're getting to the point where they're about to decide, hey, this taxing's got to stop. We're not getting as much for our money as we should be.
What do you think the solution will be, or what do you think that the people will
decide? The thing that we proposed out of AOI, and there were some interesting people on that committee. Kevin Kelly was a member of the committee. I was on the committee. Georgia Nalla was there. Other people from Oregon Tax Research, and I've forgotten several others. And we concluded that at that time that a constitutional amendment in Oregon that would limit the ability of taxing districts to spend. And we provided ways that they could increase that expenditure if it became necessary, but just a plain limitation based on the income of the people of the state of Oregon. In other words, we take the personal income. Mm-hmm. And as the personal income grew, then the ability to spend could grow. But as a percent of the personal income, it couldn't exceed us so much.
What about levies?
This would include all spending. So, mm-hmm. So then, if you had a system like that that limited spending, then the tax system just depends on which is the most convenient for the people.
Mm-hmm. How does the sales tax issue fall into this? I know it's come up a number of times.
If you had a provision like I'm talking about, it wouldn't make any difference whether you had a sales tax, a property tax, or a, mm-hmm. or an income tax, whichever is the fairest way, because the ability to spend that money would be limited.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How was that received?
Well, we thought it was a pretty neat idea. There were some problems to it, but we thought they could be worked out. We presented it to the ATIA administration when at the beginning, and he totally rejected the scheme. Vic felt that the best way to control the matter was to control tax collections. Mm-hmm. And the trouble with that is, as we have seen since that time, is that we call things other things than taxes. We have user fees and all kinds of other things that are really taxes. The lottery, for an example, is nothing more than a tax.
But it's a voluntary tax.
It's a voluntary tax. It's one I don't pay, but a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. But it's nothing more than a tax. It just takes money out of the private sector and puts it in the public sector, and that, to me, is a tax.
Mm-hmm. So the constitutional limit would also affect
it. It would control all spending.
Uh-huh.
for every taxing district would be limited in its expenditures. And what we had in mind was that they would be limited to what they had expended in the preceding year, plus an amount for inflation. And that would be established by the legislature on a biennial basis, what the inflation rate was determined to be. Mm-hmm. So that that your ability to spend was limited. And you'd say, well, how do they get into new programs? Mm-hmm. Well, the way you get into new programs, of course, is decide what programs you want to eliminate. You know, which are we going to get rid of the horse collars? And so you have to make judgments and priority judgments.
Did you go to the legislature with the plan?
We didn't go with the legislature with it. We went to the governor to see if he would support it. And if he wouldn't support it, there's no use going. Mm-hmm. 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 And for some strange reason, we've never been able to get that started. I suggested to AOI here a year or so ago that they ought to take another look at that old study. But nothing happened.
What were the problems associated with it?
Well, of course, you'd have to determine what the personal income was. That would have to be determined. Which revenue can do pretty well, but it's kind of like the ad valorem tax limitations. It's how do you decide who gets what if you have an overall limitation? Mm-hmm. So there were some other technical problems to it, but I think they could have worked out. But it was a unique concept and. Mm-hmm.
Is there any other state?
No. There's been some talk about it. It wasn't a unique idea with us. We picked it up from somewhere, but I don't know where.
Uh-huh. Any country or anywhere, any body of government that you know that operates on that plan?
No, I don't. Uh-huh. Except that Oregon did at one time through the 6% limitation.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Because that was their only resource, you see, was ad valorem taxes. But we've had income taxes for so long that people forget that, and they don't even understand what the 6% limitation was about.
Do you think the public can absorb, assimilate enough information to be able to make a sound judgment on this issue? I mean, this almost goes back to our discussion we had off tape yesterday on Republic versus Democracy.
I think it's always very dangerous for the public to get involved in writing tax law. I've been involved in writing tax law, not as a legislator, but as a part of an industrial organization, timber tax laws. I was involved in that after I left the legislature. And to write law, tax law, is an extremely complex matter. For an example, in writing, changing the timber tax law that we discussed earlier, going to a severance tax on the west side, which they had on the east side. But I think it cost us about $300,000 in legal fees to get that law drafted and to accommodate the amendments that were necessary to make it viable in the legislature. Now, for citizens, as in ballot measure 5, to begin to write tax law, as a bunch of amateurs, you get distortions that are really intolerable. Ballot measure 5 is an atrocious measure, and it does violence to the tax structure in Oregon that goes way beyond the limitation. For an example, in the city of Ashland, is a classic example. They have received absolutely no tax relief under ballot measure 5, and in all likelihood will not.
Because of the appreciation of value.
Because
property.
Of the appreciation of value in the homes in Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, prior to ballot measure 5, the appreciation in value in homes in Ashland would have made no difference whatsoever, because the levy was based on the budget, mm-hmm. rather than the budget being based on the levy. So actually what has happened in Oregon through ballot measure 5, we have adopted the California system,
yeah.
which they finally rejected. And that was that you set a levy. Mm-hmm. You see? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that does real violence to some of the controls in the Oregon ad valorem tax system.
Do you think
that was totally inadvertent? I don't think the ballot measure 5 people mm-hmm. wanted that to happen, nor did they may not even know that it's happening yet, because in Multnomah County it's working fine.
Well, there's been a lot of appreciation of property values there too.
Yeah, but not to the point where you've reached the limit, you see.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I noticed, in fact, last night I was walking down the street and I went past a real estate office and I noticed a house that probably in most parts of Portland would have sold for $45,000-$50,000 at the most, and they were selling it for $110,000 here. And I know a few years ago it was not like that.
No. It's been amazing. I'm in the banking business. Uh-huh. And we finance builders in Ashland. And to know what the builder has invested and what he sells the property for as a finished house is just unbelievable. Uh-huh. And yet these people coming from California up until the last year or so have been real happy. They sell a house down there for $300,000 or $400,000 and come up and buy a better house up here for $250,000, and they think it's a great deal, even though the house only cost to build maybe $160,000.
Has that inflated other costs in the area?
Well, it's created problems for the old time residents because you see these houses, an assessor looks at them and he says, "Gee whiz, a house like the one you were looking at." This house only worth $45,000, but it's selling $150,000. So that is the market value of that house. Mm-hmm. And so all houses like it are in that market value. So they raise the assessment, and of course the taxes now can go up. They wouldn't have gone up before, but now they do. So the old-time residents are leaving town. Mm-hmm. They're moving to Talent, mm-hmm. where they can buy the $45,000 house in Talent for $50,000.
Right. And I noticed driving through Talent last night that there are a lot of trailers in the area, too.
Yes. Yeah. Talent probably has a larger portion of its population in manufactured housing than most other communities. Ashland has hardly any. Mm-hmm. Talent has a lot of them.
That's because of the inflated prices of houses?
Not necessarily. I think it's because Talent political leadership years ago decided that there was nothing really wrong with manufactured housing mm-hmm. if it was properly installed. Mm-hmm. And that it was an easier, a less expensive way for people to get into a home. Mm-hmm. And so that made it easier for people to establish those kinds of living arrangements in Talent than in other places. And Ashland is very difficult.
Yeah.
Phoenix has a lot of them. Medford has some. But Ashland has hardly any.
Mm-hmm. Well, in our discussion last night a little bit on republics and democracies, do you think that it's appropriate for the public to set general directions of tax policies? We want taxes to come from this area not that area.
I think it's important for people to be involved in those things. Mm-hmm. What I think is wrong is for people to attempt to do it themselves. I think the best government is the result of people electing individuals who understand the problems thoroughly and who can work with others to get things done. Mm-hmm. But for people to try and do it themselves, I don't think that we can, I don't think that people have the time to devote to the intricacies of these governmental activities that is necessary to make sound decisions.
Do you think that people are electing people who know what kind of decisions to make?
I don't know. I won't comment on that. I think people are deceived by candidates. I think candidates say things and then are unable to accomplish them. And I think the worst thing that's happening with respect to that it's awfully hard to get confident people to give of their time in this day and age to do these things. And I think that's a tragedy. I think that we should somehow limit the amount of time that is spent in enacting law. And
Term limitations
on the length of the sessions.
On the length of the sessions.
Yes.
Not necessarily on the terms.
Not necessarily on the term limitations, although I think I support term limitations now. When I was in the legislature, I did not. Senator Governor Attia, when he was a state senator, put in a bill limiting terms, and I told him I thought he'd lost his mind. But since then, I kind of think maybe this is a good thing. Although in Oregon, seniority system mm-hmm. is not nearly as strong as it is in the Congress of the United States. Mm-hmm. In Oregon, at least when I served in the legislature, people were appointed to committee chairmanships and to positions of responsibility based on demonstrated ability, not seniority. And if you're working along those lines, then I don't think that term limitations have all that much mm-hmm. need. Mm-hmm. But certainly people ought, I think we ought to rely on abilities rather than just longevity.
Do you think if we limit terms, we open ourselves up to being more affected by lobbyists who obviously have no term limit?
Well, of course, I don't have a bad feeling about lobbyists. Mm-hmm. I was one, mm-hmm. and when I was in the legislature, I had no ill will towards lobbyists. I felt that lobbyists were an important part of the process for the simple reason that no one can possibly know the intimate details of every activity that goes on in the state. And without someone up there to provide the information that you need to make decisions, you're just acting in a vacuum, and that isn't a good way to make decisions.
But aside from lobbyists being, and there are all sorts of lobbyists, they're probably good lobbyists and not so good lobbyists, aside from the value that they give to a subject by their knowledge, does it reduce the pool of knowledge by having limits on terms of legislators that don't have the additional experience to be able to determine what the lobbyists are saying?
Well,
I
don't think so. What I think would be a good move for Oregon would be to revise the system so that experienced people mm-hmm. in the private sector could be induced to run mm-hmm. and to serve as a civic duty rather than as a political career.
And how do you do that? By limiting sessions?
I think you have to limit the amount of time that is spent mm-hmm. doing this, number one, and I don't see that as a great problem. If you get people who are used to making decisions in the legislative process, they can make decisions very rapidly. The people who procrastinate are the people who are not used to making decisions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you think that we can actually induce those people to?
Well, I would hope so. I would hope so. Because we have a lot of talent in Oregon. as every state does. But these talented people just simply do not want to get involved. Now, one of the other things is of course, the press, I think, is hurting our system in that they want to find out some sort of detail in everyone's life so that they can sell newspapers and television time, I guess. And it's pretty hard for human beings to live a life of complete rectitude. And so a lot of people, including myself, and I feel I've lived a pretty good life, but I would not want to subject myself to allegations that unproven allegations, mm-hmm. untrue allegations that may come up if you yeah. run for political office again. And that's a travesty. I think it's just terrible.
How do you deal with that without limiting the freedoms of the press?
Well, I don't know how you deal with it. I think that the press have to recognize what they're doing and get some responsibility in the press. That's how you recognize. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about this freedom of the press. What we really have is the freedom of the press to impose their own limitations on what people find out. Censorship takes place every day in the television studios.
Editing.
They call it editing, but in fact it's censorship. Mm-hmm. And those people can, by what they take out, can formulate public opinion. It's very dangerous. And if they don't become more responsible in how they're doing these things, they're going to lose freedom of the press. That is what will happen.
But these companies are all in competition with each other to be able to sell their product. And
well, yes, they are. But the strange part of it is, and the interesting part of it is, they all are presenting the same point of view. ABC, CBS, NBC, my God, you switch from one to the other on television, and they're all talking about the same damn thing, as if they were run by the same outfit. And I don't care what you think about Rush Limbaugh, but here's a guy who's providing a different perspective. You may not agree with it, but it's different. And what has this guy done? He has taken over the radio audience. So that is bringing some responsibility back into the reporting, particularly of political activity. And thank goodness that's going on, because if it wasn't, I believe that the news media, through their ability to quote edit, mm-hmm. can formulate public opinion in this country that could ultimately destroy it. And I'll tell you, 45 seconds is not long enough time to determine serious issues, and that's what they do. Well, we're devoted to
it. But hopefully newspapers will compensate.
Hopefully they will, but here again, the number of newspapers is severely limited anymore. And they're being owned by one group.